Hey all, welcome back to Economic Street. It's your boy Nicholas.
Hello?
And we're here to announce that we're back. It's been a hot minute since we've been here.
Very long time.
So 3 years. It's been a testing journey in that, but we're just here to say that we're back, recording, back with podcasts, back with, we're going to be doing a little bit here and there to be back on your airwaves on a more consistent basis. I've had a bit of a transition period, but it's just nice to be back with everyone.
Most definitely, yeah. It's been a hot minute. We've been through a pandemic, cost of living, career changes. So there's a lot to unpack. life doesn't stand still, does it, Nick?
No, not at all. Not at all. Saying not even career change, even personal circumstances as well. Married man now as well, joint the crew. Congratulations.
Thank you. I've missed this, and I've got a lot to get off my chest in the season because a lot of people are moving mad in this world. So from the politicians to even the corporate world, so things have been heating up, and there's a lot to talk and unpack. So I'm excited.
No, I'd echo those sentiments to saying 3 years is a long time, and A lot has happened in that time period, as you said, saying when we was last with everyone, it was in the midst of the pandemic. But now we're on the other end of that. But we've kind of moved into a kind of a new economy. But before we kind of crack on there, just in terms of what we've been up to, as I say, in from my perspective in the last 3 years, as I say, we've gone through job career changes, moving on from the stock exchange. Structural equity analyst at Bloomberg, covering or the lead analyst for the UK in Bloomberg. Kids are getting older, saying this is 7 now, the youngest is 4, so it's just pure fighting in my household. But a lot of these people.
Mondays is SmackDown.
literally, it's. It's mayhem, especially the younger one, so aggressive, it's unbelievable.
I wonder where he gets it from, mate.
Not me.
That's a beautiful thing, parenthood, so it's crazy, time flies, so.
Indeed, I wouldn't change it for the world, just saying, it puts things into perspective, and kind of from my own perspective, it does make it difficult to juggle things sometimes, but at the same time, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a blessing. I'll get there as well. So, yeah. That's coming. Yeah, that's on the horizon in the not too distant future. So, I guess it's part of getting through your seasons in life. So, hats off to the missus for raising two beautiful boys. So,
thank you.
That's good. Nah, it's speaking of which, there's been a lot of changes on this side as well. So, as you mentioned, I've gotten married. And thank you. So then from a career standpoint, there's a lot has been going on over the past few years, I would say. So obviously everybody knew that I was self-employed at the time. And then what I've kind of tried to do, or I am doing, I should say, is just adding different income streams to my bow. So over the last couple of years, I've been building up my accounting practice, going through the accounting, and then last year, I also bought a franchise, education franchise. So as you guys know, what we talk about is economics, it's education. So I've always had a passion for education. And I said, you know what, let me also use my teaching ability to benefit the younger generation. So I bought a Kumon franchise about a year ago. So juggling the accounting, amongst other things, and it's been a very interesting experience, kind of trying to blend all things together.
And how would you say, just like circling back, so we're at two different kind of standpoints. I've gone the employment working, not 9 to 4. To five, isn't it? But yeah, the employment route.
You're not
doing
a standard 35-hour week.
No, unfortunately, I'm not. and you've gone the entrepreneurial route. And in that time, I think just for our listeners and for us, it's two different crossroads in the sense of that's kind of one of the things that we had to think about in terms of why you kind of had to be put on a back burner a little bit, if we're being honest with each other. It was for good reasons then to kind of get things right. As in, with having the two young boys and the missus at home at the time, I kind of had to switch priorities a little bit, if I was being honest. But then even with yourself, the route you've gone, being an entrepreneur, it's not an easy task. You have said you've got many, many hats that you have to put on and juggle. How you found that journey and process from kind of like going, this is me deep diving, because you was doing economic street and other stuff, but you've gone full on entrepreneurial, you're running different few businesses. And I said to me, hats off to you and commend what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant question. And in all honesty, it's been a myriad of emotions. You go through highs and lows. Anybody that's self-employed will tell you that. Let's even go all the way back to the pandemic, right? If you're self-employed, you don't get certain workplace benefits, right? So that's the one. Two, you have to look for business. You have to drum up business, no matter what the season. By the grace of God, God has been very good. Like, you know, with the accounting practice, that was just growing organically through word of mouth. Ideally, what I would like to do is, or what I'd like to have done is acquire a business, another accounting practice. Everybody's looking to retire, but the industry, that's going to be another thing for another day. But the industry is very, it's very pretentious and snobbish when it comes to things like that. So, they're looking for your own firm to be of a certain size already. They're looking for just a range, like, range of categories, and it's crazy because you just think, wait, I'm already qualified. What are you talking about? I'm already in the account. So that was interesting from that side. And then obviously you're then coming, or you're going from lockdowns into a cost of living crisis that has a different, has its own, it's similar face, but slightly more nuanced challenges with that, because now, you know, people's incomes, raw incomes are falling. So that takes a toll on the family budget. At least during the pandemic, people were receiving government support in the form of either furlough or self-employment income support, then disappeared. But you have a cost of living crisis where prices are skyrocketing, incomes are not really changing to match that. So that brings its own set of challenges. That's when I also started to think, okay, what else can I add? What other markets can I venture into? And how can that fit nicely with, number one, my current life stage, obviously being married, and also just with my skill set, which has always been the finance, the economics, and the education all intertwined. So, yeah, I'd say it's been a real interesting journey, because you have to, it's dynamic. You have to adapt. Mm-hmm. You have to constantly, either reconfigure. Sometimes you're troubleshooting. Sometimes you're just. It's a whole body, but I wouldn't change it for the world. I think it suits my personality a lot more than, you know, being in traditional employment and a corporate ladder, because, boy, that's a different beast in its own as well.
It is indeed. No, but I love what you're saying that it's, because if we're being honest, the entrepreneurial self-employment route is not for everyone. As I said, for me at my time, I would love to go in, circumstances dictated that, say, mortgage, kids, nursery fees, to take that jump.
It stacks.
And if I was being honest with myself at that time, it wasn't enough for me to go wholeheartedly and take that jump. Just as I said, just to be honest with myself and the audience, it just wasn't there at that time. As I said, when you got the mortgage and the nursery fees to pay, it's like, oh, this is a big jump. So I wholeheartedly commend the approach you're doing, but also at the same time, though, it's not for everyone. It's each person kind of self-discovery per se, and go on that journey to understand what it is they can want to do or don't want to do. For example, as I said, especially for the time that you were doing it anyway, but you wholeheartedly went into it during such a difficult time of the pandemic. So it must have been, you must have said, we've known each other for decades now, but I can imagine the sleepless nights on certain occasions, the stuff that even between us as boys, the stuff that he was going through that even I may not know, the difficulties of running a business and multiple businesses. It's hard enough in normal times, let alone in a pandemic. Take my hats off to you.
I think you're absolutely right. Number one, it's not for everybody. I know people that are very risk averse. So the thought of not having a regular income scares people, especially when you already have responsibilities. So everybody has to kind of just consider their own circumstances. And also, as you said, know themselves. What can they handle? What are they not able to handle? What works for them? What doesn't? So for me, the beauty of it at the time as well was I wasn't yet married. And then I was still living at home. So that way I was able to keep my costs low. Now, obviously, I've entered a different season that comes with new pressures, right? So there's no such thing as, you know, you just have to get it. You have to get it. And it's good, you know, for me, obviously, I'm a man of faith. So my faith is at the center of everything that I do. And just even understanding, just knowing God and knowing what provisions have been made. So I think as time has gone on, it's become better to remain grounded and not stress as much because, well, being honest, I've got a few grays now.
Join the club. Join the club.
I can't be young for life. I thought I'd be young for life, but raising a phone with the stress. So
I had my mother in law go, "Oh my God, there's something in your beard. Come here, it's a bit." She's got to wipe it. They're like, "No, that's my great hair." So welcome to the club.
I was avoiding it for the longest. It was just all up here, but now it's trying to migrate. I'll be on my mustache. It's been real. It's been absolutely real. I've enjoyed it. I'm still growing. I'm still building. So, you know, that journey, you don't stop. Like, every day you have to try and go to the next level, strive for the next level. So, yeah, and that's what I'm doing in this season. Thankfully, now also being married, that has been a great support because now you can put your heads together. And I always say, you know, the way I look at life is this. It's you can go further with more people. Obviously, you have to be united and have unity with people. Mm-hmm. If everybody's living for, let's say, okay, we're in our 30s now. Let's say, God's grace, we've got another 50 years ahead of us, right? But if you take somebody else's 50 years and add it to yours, that automatically become 100. So you can do a lot with 100 years than with 50. So that's the mindset I'm now traveling with. And, you know, we just keep going. And looking for other people to work with and partner with, because I believe very much in the power of partnership. It's very difficult to build something solo. It's a lot faster, quicker to do so with other people. But obviously, we know that trust is a major factor in all these things. So,
I definitely echo those sentiments. As in, if you can share problems, half problems, and it just makes it so much easier in the long run. If you've got someone that can, if you're on the same wavelength and page as someone, it can make it a lot easier than doing the challenges by yourself. You've got to sleep at night by yourself. It's not fun.
Not fun at all. It wasn't free.
As we touched on, I guess for our viewers, as we know, we touched on the last time we were here, it was during the pandemic. We've now kind of moved out of the pandemic into what I kind of call the new economy. So we were in a period of pre-pandemic, we were in a period of low inflation, low interest rates. So you had kind of easy money, say. So what I mean by easy money, there was a lot of credit out available out there to people, and that was being used for cheap. Yeah, and that's key, for cheap. That was using an abundance, whether that's for your credit cards or your mortgages to buy your properties. There was a lot of of surplus credit out there.
Yeah.
Then we had the pandemic, which brought us into a recession, external recession, but then also that then brought on its own pressures because of cost of living, which one was to do with coming out of the pandemic and supply chain squeeze, but also we had other geopolitical factors such as the war, which is also which is then also kind of accelerated that. And then now, so we've kind of moved into a period of ultra low interest rates and low inflation to the cost of living crisis. Higher interest rates, complete opposite. Complete, and we've not seen that. Same, what we haven't seen that
for decades.
So it's been a long time since we've been in this period of higher interest rates and higher inflation.
It's mad because it's hard to solve. It's tough to solve when you have those dual things. Like, how do you get rid of high inflation? You have to put up interest rates, but if you put up interest rates, you're going to be making it more expensive to access credit or keep your credit lines going because your mortgages become more expensive, your repayments and everything else becomes more expensive. So now you're being squeezed on both ends. Prices are going up. The cost to fund it is going up as well. And then your incomes are not matching it, which is why we've then had all these basically societal tensions, like strikes, industrial actions that are still ongoing, right? Still ongoing, from the rural industry to the healthcare sector. And I don't blame people. I don't blame people. I look at it like this. I say, if we go back to the pandemic, when they started printing a lot of money and shutting down the economy, that is fundamentally suicidal. You can't do stuff like that. Because there's always two parts to an economy. There's the demand side and there's the supply side. Okay, you get rid of the demand by keeping people locked in their houses, first of all, which is why they had to introduce furlough to basically keep companies running, right? Because if you get rid of workers, you get rid of the production. So on the supply side, you've shut down factories as well. So supply is now squeezed. Well, you reopen the economy. Everybody's out of their houses. They want to start spending again properly. But factories take a while to come back online. You can't just switch production on overnight. It doesn't work that way. And now you have the whole world reactivating at the same time, or needing stuff at the same time. Completely disastrous. So that's why prices shot up. And then you exacerbate that with your stupid wars. Like, you're always fighting people. Like, just leave it alone. Like, and people don't understand this as well. Inflation has three major causes. It's either going to be something to do with demand. So we call that demand pull, everybody, in economics, where something to do with demand. Maybe you've got all these loans or all this income that the government's created, and that generates basically extra demand. But then you've also got cost push. So that's to do with your supply chains, as you mentioned earlier. And then you've got the printing of money. So what we saw was a perfect storm or perfect collision coming together. Which is I don't understand. I don't think people can quite fathom how serious it was coming out of the pandemic into the cost of living when all these things are colliding, because the central bank has printed a lot more money to try and keep the economy stable. And then supply chains have led to higher cost push inflation. Now, in economics, the easiest one to solve is demand pull inflation. You raise interest rates. Cost push inflation, on the other hand, is external. You have no control. So most of the inflation we started to see was cost push. It was being driven by the fact that you have bottlenecks in the supply chain. That's not changing overnight. That picture cannot change even within 6 months. It takes at least 12 months or 2 years to see any tangible change. But you're raising interest rates because your objective is always to try and keep inflation low. I'm sorry, but that's not going to solve it, because cost push inflation is totally out of the remit of interest rate policy and monetary policy. It will make just about a negligible dent.
Yeah. And I guess also that perfect storm, the geopolitical with Russia and the UK and more external factors in terms of one of the biggest increases in cost for everyone was energy. And that was another great increase due to geopolitical factors. So to your point, we kind of had that perfect storm these factors happening, which is leading to prices shooting up for an everyday person.
All at the same time as well. And in economics, there's this belief that obviously the easiest solution when prices are going up is to for workers to turn around and go to their companies and say, listen, you need to give me a pay rise. The problem with that in economics is this: if you ask for a pay rise, that effectively pushes up the cost for companies. And when cost for companies goes up, guess what they do? They turn around and put the prices even further.
Pass on.
Becomes a spiral, becomes a race to the top. So that was what the governments were really scared of, that that was going to happen, which is why you've seen them push back against all the strikes. They're still not really giving, especially in the public sector, they're not giving workers that pay rise they really need to even just be at an even level, stay unaffected. So it was mad. For me, what I also recognized was just the there was a lot of idiocy. Let's just be honest about it. A lot of these politicians don't really understand all these principles. Two, I think what's his name, Andrew Tate, always says that peace is always worth a discussion. You are taking on Russia at a time when things are already very uncertain and unstable globally. And then to spite yourselves, you say nobody can buy Russian oil and gas. Well, what you're effectively doing is by cutting off a main part of the supply chain, you're forcing everybody to rely on the rest of the world.
Best.
And if you're relying on the rest, guess what's going to happen? Prices will
This is
go
a
up
good call.
because everybody's now competing for the same amount of resources by the virtue that you have cut off some of the resources available. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And they're still carrying on. It's all against this, I don't even want this. This belief, this ideology that, they are the champions of democracy. Everybody has a different system of government that doesn't necessarily fit with the profile of democracy. What's your problem? Just accept it. And now we're seeing even more consequences from the actions of all these, especially Western governments, because the world is transitioning now into a unipolar world. And that means, fundamentally speaking, your voice as a Western or Western collective is going to be less. It's going to have less influence. It's going to have less power. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that all these things have been happening at the same time because the people that really suffer are the everyday people. Like, there's very, very few things that they can do to mitigate the consequences of this. So
Yes. So we kind of moved it. So it's not only kind of like, is it a new economy? It's kind of like maybe a new world, maybe even. So everything that's going on, it's such a different climate to pre-pandemic to the climate we're in. For the everyday person, some people are just worried about how they can just put food on their table. It's quite sad that it's the everyday person that's kind of impacted by all of this. How can we help them? Not because not everyone here. It's not that. It's not just the lower income, but it's a range of people that are impacted. But how do we help the person saying, well, it's all nice and working? I think it was one of the Bank of England committee members were saying not to ask for pay rises. It's all right for people that are on higher salaries to say, okay, it's
Mad.
fine for you to pay rises. But if I'm struggling as it is to put food on my table, or saying, I can't heat my house, I'm having to wrap up in 10 blankets at night. It's that fine dichotomy that we're in. How do we balance all of this? And say the kind of essence of economics in its basic form is the allocation of scarce resources. And it really feels like we're in
Oh,
that.
boy. It's you know what? You know my stance already. I'm not gonna hold back. First thing you have to do is just bin the lot of them. Just bin the lot of them. Just need a clear out from the parliament, for the the Bank of England, because they're all idiots. Well, let me not say that. But a lot of them don't know what they're doing. It's like they're just completely blinded. They're so out of touch as well with the plight of the everyday person. The fact that you see use of food banks going up alone should sound the alarm bell that you need to do something. And we're going to see once this election comes just what people really think about you, because people let you know through their voting.
Yeah.
Me personally, none of the options are great right now. They all have, they have serious, serious shortcomings. For me, because I've really sat down and thought about this for a very long time. And the penny dropped one day when I was speaking to, so for some people, they don't know that I still help out A-level students with economics when it comes to exam time. And I was having a discussion with one of my students one day, and I made the point that, you know, in the West, we're credit driven. That's how we spend. And consumer spending is the largest component of the economy.
Yeah.
And I was saying, so in that moment, I was telling him how severely indebted we are as well, which is another problem that governments are trying to tackle. The penny, he just said something in that moment. It was like, I was like, why? Obviously, it's so obvious. Why didn't I think about it? He said, so basically, every time companies make profit or employees receive their salary and income, that's effectively debt. I was like, yeah, it actually is. There's more debt, especially in the West, than there is GDP. And currently, the forecast is that by 2028, there will be more debt globally than there is GDP. So that tells you that debt is growing faster than basically income.
Yeah.
So what does that then mean? Well, for me, as an accountant, I sat down and thought about it. When you're looking at accounting, you have two main statements, profit and loss, and the balance sheet. When you have debt, it sits on the balance sheet side, and that causes general weakness to your ability to continue to keep things going, right? Because your balance sheet represents your net assets. The more indebted you are, the more you have to dedicate of any money that you make towards paying it off. So we need a debt jubilee. That's the first thing. We need some type of global collective bargaining agreement that says, boom, we're going to write off these debts. But how do you practically do that?
Good luck.
So that's the first, you have to convince them to do a debt jubilee. But then how do you actually execute it? For me, you have to do a one-time transfer on the balance sheet side to the statement of other comprehensive income. And that kind of almost makes the debt effectively become income. That's a right income for me. And then, but then the other side is, okay, what about the people that gave the debt? Well, listen, Bank of England, you have a reputation from just, you know, since the financial crisis 15 years ago, bailing people out. So you guarantee the debt. Print the money, you always print the money. But do it systematically. Do it. I mean, it sounds like a Mad Hatter moment, but it's like, what other effective tool is there to get people out from crippling debt as well as this? Oh, now some people might push back and say, right, if you get the Bank of England guaranteeing debt, that effectively means they, you know, print more money, and that will lead to higher inflation. Well, you have to do it systematically. So if a debt originally that somebody had or a company had was over 15 years, well, the debt holder, what you have to do is pay them back over that 15 years.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that stretches it out and the impact to the rest of the economy. But I think something has to give, because if it doesn't, and we can't continue on this trajectory, you're just going to be squeezing families more, and you're going to have populist uprisings eventually. I don't think at the moment we're there yet for that kind of thing. I think we're still very, we can groan, we can mumble, but this is not you know, the early 20th century with the Bolshevik movement, with the revolution. But eventually, when people are pushed, when you push a dog into a corner, eventually it's going to start biting back. So,
it's going to bite back.
It's really hard to conceptualize how this will, like, it's taken me so long to actually think, right, okay, how is this going to work? Because I don't see what you can tell a mom that's already working full time, a single parent, even a two-parent household where they're both working full-time, still got kids, to basically do more work.
Yeah.
This country, especially in the UK, we have a problem with productivity. So low productivity, we don't productivity is not growing, which basically means you produce more per hour of work. And that's what you can then, is when you produce more, you can sell more and obviously make more, which then can help rebalance your economy, because our economy is completely imbalanced at the moment. So I don't see how you can tell workers, the working age, to basically work more or produce more. Like,
no.
Economics doesn't work that way. You have to train them.
You know, unfortunately not.
Need to help. So you can't really say, okay, people, the onus is on you.
Yeah.
To try and fix the situation for yourself and make it better. Very people have that spare capacity to be able to do that. And two, even if they were able to do that, what other impact would that have on the rest of their other elements of their life? You're a family man. You can talk about it. Like, you understand? So it's like, okay.
We're laughing already. It's a very interesting period of time that we're in. And I forgot how you're always willing to speak your mind with your ideas, which is nice. That's what we're here for.
I've got time for these politicians. So
this is what we're here for. And I think generally it's nice to be having these discussions more often. Current affairs, what's going on, what's impacting us. And then going back to our bread and butter, just being able to help, any little tips and financial nuggets that we can give any person listening or watching this, just basic tips about how they can navigate their everyday finances. That was at the heart of why we kind of started Economic Street, is to help promote financial literacy and financial education, and to help people become more financially savvy. So these are the things that we're looking to bring back to the audience, and it's just nice to be back and having these discussions again, because it's been a hot minute.
It has. So stay locked in, stay tuned. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you share this video. If you like what you've heard, if you don't like what you heard, we want to hear from you as well.
Definitely.
What would you like us to discuss? Because obviously it's your life that is being impacted. So if you have a topic that's on your heart that, you know, is burning, we can also get you on the platform as well.
Definitely.
So yeah, we're back.
With that, to my part, thanks for your time again. It's nice to be back. So say we'll be here again. To Ola's point, anything you do like, don't like, don't hesitate to let us know. So if you want to be on the platform, let us know too. And so we're here to help promote and push that financial literacy here in the UK and beyond.
Yeah.
So and with that, stay locked in. Have a good one, guys. See you later.